Warren Sharp. Good afternoon, Warren. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Obviously, I can talk now. Doing real well. certainly nothing compared to the struggles you've had to deal with your health. Happy to hear you on the radio and kicking butt down there. But yeah, it was about 2 months where I was without my voice. But thanks to the doctors up at Johns Hopkins, got me back on track.
What was it, Warren?
It was a contractor was doing some work in my basement, and he did not verify that the gas-fired hot water heater was venting its exhaust properly outside. And some of that carbon monoxide and other toxic byproducts of, you know, natural gas combustion were being filtered into the basement office where I work, as well as the bathroom next door to my office. And within 48 hours of them installing the hot water heater and leaving, I couldn't talk. I mean, my voice, it just deteriorated. The tissue in my throat, in the larynx and the voice box and everything like that. And it was pretty bad. I mean, it could have been a lot worse though. So at least it wasn't, you know, fatal.
Oh, so that was an option?
Well, I mean, if it caused
not for you,
I mean, carbon monoxide being as lethal and deadly as it is, definitely could have taken that route had I not gotten the solution fixed to the hot water heater and the exhausting problem quickly enough. I noticed that there was some sort of an issue, obviously, with my voice disappearing, and was able to get a contractor in here to rectify it quickly.
Wow.
So that it's no further damage was done.
Wow. That's an incredible story. Not what I would recommend as far as that's concerned. Well, you know, let's, before we go to a little bit of the team totals, what about the team wins? Who do you see as making an impact this year as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different futures that I think have a little bit of value. I think one team that a lot of people maybe are overlooking and even potentially overlooking this week is the Arizona Cardinals. This is a team that was actually pretty good last year in my early on success rate metric, a very good team despite the fact that they didn't post very many positive results on the scoreboard and win very many games last year. But it was not that far of a drop-off from where this team was the year before when they were challenging Carolina in the NFC Championship game. So this is a Arizona Cardinals team I think has a lot of upside as long as John Brown could stay healthy. Obviously a big question mark there. But the running game, you know, the issue is Carson Palmer. How long is he going to last? Because he certainly is getting older. But I think the defense is looking healthy right now. And I think that they're a team that I'm a little bit optimistic on, and a team that they're playing this week that I'm a little bit pessimistic on this upcoming season is the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions were a team that, look, they don't have a very good defense, and their offense basically was centered around winning these close games. 8 of their 9 wins came by one score or less, and that means that you have to be converting touchdowns in the red zone for them to win these games. Every point matters to a team like the Detroit Lions with a bad defense and a somewhat limited offense. But they just removed Anquan Boldin, their best red zone threat. They pass the ball more often than they run, and he was the best target in terms of efficiency, productivity, and most frequently used player down in the red zone. Without Anquan Boldin on the roster this upcoming season, the burden is going to fall to guys like Eric Ebron, who really haven't proven himself to be necessarily dependable as well as injury prone. And otherwise, you can predict possibly Golden Tate to fill that role. But in this game against Detroit, for example, against Arizona, for example, Arizona is the number one team at defending tight ends. So when you get down into the red zone and you think, hey, we'll just let Ebron take the targets that we were going to give to Boldin, that's not really going to work with a defense like Arizona, which is so good at stopping tight ends. So I think it's going to be a problem this week, and I think it's potentially a bigger problem this season, because I think the NFC North, where Detroit resides in, I think the Green Bay Packers are still going to be an extremely good team. Defense is a little bit shaky, but offensively, not even better this year potentially than last year, I think. And then I think the Minnesota Vikings are going to be a little bit better. And the Chicago Bears may not disappoint as much as people think, considering the negative viewpoints of that team. So I think those three teams are sort of ascending, and I think Detroit's the one who's going to take a step back in the NFC North.
What about Minnesota? You know, Bradford is one of the guys that I have on my fantasy team, but he's my second string guy. But they have put themselves, with Dalvin Cook, they have put together a pretty good offense on Minnesota's team, along with their good defense that was already there.
I 100% agree. I think that the fact of the matter is scheduling plays into this, and you know how I take into account scheduling a ton. They face the second easiest schedule of opposing defenses, and if we take a step back, we think about what this Minnesota team was last season. This is a team that was supposed to be quarterbacked by Teddy Bridgewater. It was supposed to have offensive coordinator Norv Turner, and was supposed to have a somewhat respectable offensive line. Their offensive line becomes the most injured offensive line in the NFL last year. They then have to insert Sam Bradford just a couple weeks before the start of the season because Teddy blows out his knee. Sam comes in, starts with Norv Turner. They're starting off well. They enter a bye week. They come out of the bye week playing terribly, and then Norv gets fired mid-season. So Sam Bradford's thrust in the situation where also factor in Adrian Peterson's injury. They have no run game. They have no offensive line because it's the most injured, and he's dealing with a coordinator change mid-season after only being with the team a couple weeks before the season. I'm surprised that the Minnesota Vikings did as well as they even did last season. I definitely expect a lot of better production from their offense this year against a very easy schedule that they should be able to deal with. I don't think it's impossible for them to be sitting right around 7 to 8 wins through week 12. And that means you basically only could need 1 to 2 wins late to close out an over on their win total. So I'm with you. I think the Minnesota Vikings, they didn't show it in the preseason, but I do think this is a pretty good team.
All right. That's interesting on the Minnesota Vikings. And do you think that Sam Bradford will stay the main quarterback the entire season?
As I think unless he gets hurt, he should. Against these defenses, he's going to look pretty good. He already has a lot of chemistry with the offensive coordinator. He set the NFL's record for the most accurate quarterback in the league, you know, from what he did last season. So with this schedule of defenses, I think he's going to be productive, and I don't think you're going to need to yank him in favor of Teddy Bridgewater at any point in the season.
Interesting. With the Arizona, Carson Palmer, you think can still get it done?
I do. I think Carson Palmer's demise a little bit has been exaggerated. I think if you give him enough protection, which I think is one of the key issues in this game forthcoming against the Detroit Lions, there without their two best pass rushers and a defense that was already pretty bad. But I think if you give him a little bit of time, he's going to be successful. I don't think his arm is going to fall off. This is a team, you know how I created early down success rate, one of my custom analytics, and they won that in all but 4 of their games last year, but they only won 7 of the games at the end of the day. I think there's also some secret edges here. The Cardinals get to face the Colts in week 2, probably without Andrew Luck still. They face the Cowboys week 3, who might deal with the suspension of Ezekiel Elliott. And then, of course, they face the 49ers and Rams twice each. So I think their schedule is manageable for them to be able to exceed their win total.
Yeah, and that spread has flipped, too, because it was Pick'em, and then it was Arizona now is laying the 1.5. So interesting note there that you need to pay attention to. All right, go ahead.
I was just saying that without Ezekiel Ansah there this week and Kerry Hyder, their two most productive pass rushers from last week or last season, I think that Carson's going to have time. And those linebackers are probably the worst in the NFC. So we're going to be able to see, I really think, Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson catching passes out of the backfield. Two very big weeks in fantasy.
All right. If you were to pick a shocker this week, Warren, who would it be?
You know, I think one team that could surprise a little bit would be the Jacksonville Jaguars. Look, everybody hates Blake Bortles. I mean, a local team down there, obviously. But the fact of the matter is the perception of Bortles has never been lower. It looks like the team's going to can him. They were rotating in Chad Henne. I mean, it was bad, and everybody thinks really negatively about Bortles, and I'm certainly not going to come on here and tell, you know, the folks of Florida that, you know, Blake Bortles is a good quarterback. But the reality is this week their defense gets to go up against the Houston Texans offense, which is led by Tom Savage and is without their left tackle, Duane Brown. And I think anybody's talking about this enough, but Duane Brown is arguing about his contract. He's in a dispute. He says he's going to return at some point this year, but he's not there. And it's going to be a big problem against this type of a defense like the Jacksonville Jaguars has to bring at that offensive line. And I think I would doubt that Tom Savage would have very much time to drop back and throw the ball down the field. And keep in mind, these teams, obviously divisional foes, they play a couple times a year. In their last five meetings, Jacksonville has actually led after three quarters in three out of those five games. Additionally, let's pretend they're not leading. They're on the road, obviously, as an underdog. If they're not leading, the team that is in the lead in these games really, I mean, you can kind of guess this with the head coaches that are involved, gets very conservative offensively. And what it allows is the team that's trailing to get back into the game. The team that's been trailing in the last five meetings in the fourth quarter has outscored the team that's winning 51-19.
Ooh.
So they've plenty of opportunities for, I think, if Jacksonville is down by 10 points in the fourth quarter, to get that backdoor cover that we might need to get inside this number. So I just think it's a little bit too high of a number. I love the fact that J.J. Watt's there. Obviously, the team is going to be a lot of positive energy, I believe. I was on radio in Houston earlier today. They feel like there's going to be a lot of positive energy there in the stadium. Obviously, it's after Hurricane Harvey
right.
that hit. But they feel like if this offense does nothing in the first half, doesn't score an offensive touchdown, the crowd's going to start booing the offense. They've obviously got Deshaun Watson there who could maybe take over for Tom Savage. If Tom Savage can't do anything, the crowd might turn on them. And so it really might not be as big of a home field advantage as you might otherwise think.
The Giants and the Cowboys, that's been a pretty one-sided issue with the Giants winning those games. Dallas has gone from 3.5 to 4 in this game. The Giants have what they have, and if Beckham plays, it's the same old team without, I don't know about a rushing game, but what do you feel with Dallas and the New York Giants?
Yeah, this game, this is another interesting divisional game. I mean, they've usually they were saying they want to push the divisional games till later, but they really gave us a fair number of these divisional games early in the calendar this year, week one. I think it's going to be a very difficult game for the Dallas Cowboys. I think, fortunately, they do have Ezekiel Elliott, but this is a team and an offense that really hasn't had a ton of success against the New York Giants the last few years. They haven't scored over 20 points in any one of those last three games. And I think the Giants, look, I'm down on Eli Manning in this offense. I don't really like the way that they call their offense. I don't like the inability to utilize more formations because I think that there's many edges, as your Tampa Bay Bucks do, get by using 21 or 12 personnel a little bit more frequently, and the Giants always seem to be this 11 personnel team. That being said, I don't really like this Cowboys defense whatsoever. And I think there are going to be edges for anybody who plays them, including this Giants offense. The key is giving Eli Manning enough time in the pocket to get rid of the ball quickly, but this is a quick passing team, and I really do feel like this is an offense that is going to have some semblance of success against this Cowboys defense, and I don't think the same can be said for the Cowboys offense against their defense. I think the Giants defense now, a second year with all these different pieces have come together, they're a very formidable unit, and I'm really not sure. I'd love to see Dak take the next step. I think this year he will overall, but it's going to be it's going to be interesting to watch this game out of the gates week one, him having to face a defense like the Giants will bring to town.
All right, Seattle and Green Bay, that'll be a 4:30 game. It's pretty much stayed at 3, 50 to 50.5, so they're looking for a lot of points for a Seattle team that has vastly improved their defense. Green Bay has basically done nothing except for Aaron Rodgers and giving their, you know, bringing their wide receivers back. Jordy Nelson is healthy. What do you see in this game for 50.5 that they're expecting some major numbers or major offense here?
Yeah, it is indicative of that. I really do think that the Green Bay Packers are going to be benefited by Martellus Bennett being in the lineup. You know, they've lacked a quality tight end for a number of years now. And we can try to say that Jared Cook was going to be that guy last year, but he never really did pan out into that role. And when the Patriots let go of Bennett, it was a perfect match, I think, for this offense because he's actually an underrated run blocker, but he's also very adept at getting out in space and being a reliable target for Aaron Rodgers, which is something that he's long needed at the tight end position. So I think those benefits, and then you also talk about Ty Montgomery. Don't forget, Ty Montgomery was on the roster last season as a wide receiver. Several weeks into the season last year, they convert him into a running back. He's trying to learn that position during the course of the season. Anytime he made a mistake, they would yank him and put one of the vets back there. Now he is the vet. The locker room is full of very young running backs, and he is their go-to guy at the moment. And I think the off-season of building his body into the running back shape and getting all the coaching that the running backs get in their room is going to be beneficial for this run game. Now, as you mentioned, Seattle, very difficult, especially the defensive line. They'll benefit immensely from having Earl Thomas back there, who broke his leg last season, and the defense, especially the secondary, just was completely worthless without his presence back there. He does so much for this team. So having him back there, it'll be a different Seattle defense than a lot of people remember to close the year. And then they vastly improved with Sheldon Richardson along that defensive line as into one of the best fronts in the NFL, if not the best front four in the NFL. So it's going to be very difficult, I think, for the Packers. Generally speaking, Aaron Rodgers likes to avoid Richard Sherman's side of the field. But is Richard Sherman getting older? Could he be exploited? Will they try to test him out here week one? You know, those things are all going to be determined. So I think this is going to be a fascinating game. If you notice, you know, the line really hasn't moved very much at all. Open 3-15. I'm still seeing 3-15. It's a game where I think they set a perfect number, which is, you know, generally considered home field advantage, particularly in Green Bay. I think they're definitely getting a nice solid 3 points playing at home there. So I think the book set a perfect number here and going to give a good game for all of us to watch, you know, out the gates in the late slate.
Is that a good thing to set the perfect number?
Well, they're going to eat up all the vig of everybody who's throwing their bets in there. And if they are close to being accurate, then it's perfect. I mean, it's perfect for them because they're going to be able to eat all that vig. I mean, you're taking -113 on anybody who wants to back the home team up to -115. And then you take the Eagles, slightly less juice than that. But, I don't see a problem with this number whatsoever.
He is Warren Sharp. Warren, no, why don't you give us all your information at sharpfootballanalysis.com and sharpfootballstats.com and talk about it.
You guys can find me there. Sharpfootballstats.com is my free in-season stats website. It'll be updated after every Sunday. It'll have all the latest visualized data. A lot of other sites and stats sites you'll go to, and you'll find columns of black and white text, and you'll have to make sense of it. This is a site that lays it all out for you. A lot better presentation, in my opinion, that's going to help you remember what you're seeing a lot better due to its visual presentation. And then sharpfootballanalysis.com is my in-season analysis site where you can subscribe and get updated information, all of my recommendations to clients, and detailed write-ups there. So you can follow me on Twitter at sharpfootball. Try to share a lot of useful information for free out there, and obviously I have a service that you can subscribe to as well that has done well and, you know, I think is well worth the price.
And you post your numbers too, don't you? You post your record every week and every game, don't you?
Yeah, every single week my record is up there. You'll see the documentation of that record. So there's no need to wonder, hey, is this record really real? I work for a number of the professionals out in Vegas, some of the groups. They've retained my services to help them. I've been doing this long enough. I write for ESPN. There's a lot of different ways that you guys can probably find me out there. But you're nothing in this business if you're not at least reputable. And obviously you wouldn't bring somebody on your show who was not. So
right.
I think my track record speaks for itself. My recommendations do move the number, as you can attest to. So you got to be on your toes if you decide to become a client, because when I'm putting out a total, you're going to need to get that total pretty quickly, or those lines will move.
Yes, they will. They will. Warren, thank you very much. It's good to have you back, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, perfect. And you guys stay safe down there, Big Dog. So happy to hear you back on air, and we'll be praying for you.
All right, man. Thank you very much.